The 26 class has drawn a lot of attention earlier than ever. Today, we're talking draft intel. We're going to dump it all out, get you caught up on who's buzzing, who's the name to keep an eye on moving forward. Gosh, March is here, baby. Let's get after it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back. Tyler Rucker here for the No Ceilings team in the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Took a little bit of a hiatus, a special, you know, little tribute, a special announcement, I guess if you want to put it that way. My co-host, Tyler Metcalf, in case you haven't heard, just had his first kid. The Metcalfs are all healthy, so congrats to them. Metcalf has been being a dad for a little bit. That's why we took a little bit of a pause with this, but we've also been working on some stuff behind the scenes. Seemed like a good time for everyone to kind of regroup and moving forward. I think Metcalf's going to be joining probably as soon as next week. He's getting the itch, folks, and we will be full throttle bringing you a pod all the time. Yeah, because we gotta upgrade the green room. What are we doing? But shout out to Metcalf again. I'm pumped that he's, you know, first time dad, and I'm excited to get him back. And I know we're planning a lot of fun stuff. So I wanted to go solo mode with this one, and the point today is to kind of educate fans and let them know kind of what's the buzz and the vibes around talking to NBA teams and kind of what's the storylines to monitor moving forward. This is a really talented class. In case you haven't heard, you know, this has been a class that's been hyped as going to be really special and unique, but it's lived up to that and more. It's over, you know, surpassed those expectations and dreams of a lot of fans. And I think a lot of fans right now that are, you know, coming from the NBA, this is the time of year where we get a big flock of fans. They're starting to get caught up on this class and understanding that, oh my gosh, it really could be special. So I wanted to talk about that in depth, kind of break down some players that might be, you know, some interesting names right now on the scene and just kind of do a little check-in. And I think there's a lot of names to keep an eye on moving forward, especially with March Madness approaching, that fans need to seriously monitor because they could be some big time movers in these next coming months. And all of a sudden, we'll have the pre-draft process, and then that's where things get cooking, folks. So some quick housekeeping real quick in honor of Metcalf. As I said, Metcalf, congratulations to the fam. They're all healthy, but a lot of really good stuff has been going on at our website, noceilingsnba.com. Go check that out. Quinn Fishburne on our team just had an Elijah Arenas experience piece from seeing him in person. Corey just got to scout Vanderbilt versus Tennessee, so a lot of talk about Nate Amen and Tyler Tanner. And more. Maxwell earlier this week had an Adai Mara piece. I did a kind of a breakdown of my recent scouting trip for Arizona BYU with kind of what I saw from AJ DeBanza and Braden Burries. Might be talking about those guys in a second. And then also had another piece where I got real crazy about this draft class, the top four, the race for number one, themed by the movie Heat. So there's been a lot of really good stuff, a lot of good podcasts going up too on our No Ceilings channel. So thank you guys for the support always, but let's get after it. Look, the 26 class, every single year, fans are kind of advertised about how special a class can be. This year was no different. Now, preseason, if you're just getting caught up, preseason, this was a class built by a big three. And what I mean by that is a big three in which three prospects, if they were in any other draft class, would probably be going first overall. They just happen to all be in the same class this year. Now, it's AJ DeBanza of BYU, Darren Peterson of Kansas, and Cameron Boozer of Duke. All three have lived up to the hype. All three have been tremendous, and all three still have questions moving forward. Now, the beautiful part about every draft class is we kind of get sprinkled in heaters at different times. And what I mean by that is the stretches of performances will come and go with a lot of these guys. Well, all of a sudden someone will be tremendous. And then all of a sudden they kind of fizzle down a little bit. And then the next guy starts to pop. And you've sort of seen that with a couple of these guys this year. You know, Darren Peterson obviously has had his moments of being brilliant this year. Obviously we're going to talk about the off the court stuff. Cameron Boozer's just been the Terminator, as I like to call him all year. He's been consistent, productive, but if you've been a sicko and following it the whole year, kind of the opening months of the season, people were starting to raise some concerns about the finishing stuff. That's watered down. Cam's still doing what he's doing. And then AJ DeBanza of BYU has been one of these guys that there's a lot of questions about, like, hey, he's putting up these great numbers, these great performances. against, you know, not top 100 level teams. That question, that doubt has been really watered down lately with his performance on the court. But this is what we do with every draft cycle, is we kind of monitor these guys and then we obsess and we nitpick and we try to find the weaknesses. Now, that's to some point, yes, that's great scouting. I think when there's no such thing as a perfect prospect, you try to find the thorns in a prospect and then you try to figure out, can you live with those? Can those be ironed out? Can they improve? A lot of times with evaluating and scouting, I think it's really important to not obsess with the thorns, if you want to put it that way. You want to also be able to be like, hey, let me balance out, like, what can I handle here? What's the weaknesses and are those going to be okay at the next level? But also remember to focus on the positives. Like, do the positives outweigh the concerns? If you can get to that point, pretty easy to buy in on a prospect. Focusing on these three, you know, and I want to make sure to always educate fans that are just getting caught up. So those have been the big three. Well, we're going to talk about each of them in depth. Caleb Wilson of North Carolina is now in that conversation. This was a prospect that coming into the year, scouts around the league, evaluators were excited of, but there was a lot of questions with Caleb. They were trying to figure out like, hey, this looks like the potential long-term upside swing in this class, maybe the curveball, if you want to put it that way. And what I mean by that, and it's no slander to Caleb, but he seemed like more of the really raw prospect that you're like, hey, you might be swinging a little bit on him, but if it clicks, oh my gosh. But it might have been like, hey, maybe he's going to be more of like the sixth or seventh guy. Right now, oh no, that's not the case. Caleb has been tremendous all year long. He's averaging right now 19.8 points, 9.4 rebounds, 2.7 assists on 57, 25, 71. Yes, one of those numbers you're probably like, what was that? More on that in a second. But look, Caleb's been unbelievable this year. Now, me personally, I love Caleb coming into the year. I thought that was after the big three, that's the next guy you'd take a swing on. I thought the version we've been seeing of Caleb Wilson all year was what we were going to start seeing after a couple months. So he's already surpassed my expectations and my hopes and my dreams of where he would be in his development. There's questions with his game. The outside shot has still been a question since, you know, going back to high school. It's like, hey, how consistently can we get it? And then you also kind of pair in just some of like the general rawness that comes with a lot of, you know, players in this same similar archetype where it's like, okay, the handle can get a little loose, or what's the on-ball creativity look like? Caleb's a bad man on the court. He's 6'10", around 210, 215, good length, forward measurements have been good. And then you get the intangibles and the motor and it kind of takes it to another entire, you know, stratosphere. Teams like Caleb a lot and he's in that top four discussion heavy. I would not be surprised if he gets up and on draft night, you know, obviously we've got a long way to go. So take that with a grain of salt. But like right now, there's a real legit conversation about Caleb being in that top three. It's just going to be like, okay, well, who falls out of that? But it's one thing for teams to feel it now. It's one thing also for come draft night. Okay, are you really going to pull the trigger there? I stress this now, like, hey, we're doing this in February. So much changes moving forward from month to month. Even less than that, from week to week. So while we're kind of doing a check-in right now, the most important thing, I want everyone to get a basis, and then you kind of can go off of that because, okay, that's the conversation now. Now, remember, a couple months ago, that might not have been a serious conversation. Right now, it's really a serious, like, hey, that's the heat that's been going. We'll still see, but Caleb's deserved it with the play on the court this year. Despite the questions about the outside shot, despite anything you might bring to the table, he's got one of the highest motors in this class. He's a fantastic rebounder and he is a monster on the court. And I think there's a lot of defensive upside that has not been showcased this year. So if you're talking about a potential two-way monster, and if you can unlock a couple doors with Caleb Wilson, we really start getting into a really fun, you know, galaxy when it comes to kind of projecting what he could be at the next level. Hey, it's a top four now. It's a big four, as I like to say. All these guys going to have fantastic abilities to kind of look at moving forward. Caleb also, you know, just had the big performance against Duke. Then all of a sudden after injured his hand, he's been out for a while. Reports are that he's going to be coming back really soon. that's going to be interesting to see. But thing I wanted to take away or educate folks on is, like, with a class like this, it's going to come down to the pre-draft. All these guys might be neck and neck at some point or in some front offices, but pre-draft's going to be a lot for these guys, like workouts, interviews, everything. Intel's going to be monstrous with this class. So, all right, I focused on Caleb. Let me go back now. I want to do each three of the big three. Let's start with the spice. All right, let's talk about Darren Peterson. Now, bear with me. I'm going to tiptoe this one a little bit, but I'm also going to kind of take the gloves off. So I'm sure everyone's going to love this. Darren Peterson, if you're getting caught up, one of the top combo guard, I like to say, prospects I've seen in a really long time as an evaluator. Scouts feel the same way. Really special player. High school, Darren was a monster. Versatile offensive player, playmaker, bucket getter, ridiculous two-way potential. Insane defensive flashes when it came to, you know, off-ball stuff, reading plays, anticipation, vision, timing. There's a bad man there. Darren goes to Kansas this year. Everyone thinks, like, hey, it's going to be, you know, a legit three-headed monster trying to get the number one pick. And Darren, when you watch him on the court, he absolute glides. To give a shout out to my guy, Corey Tolaba. Corey's like, he looks like a skater on the ice when it comes to Darren, how quickly, effortlessly he moves on the court. Now, Darren has been dealing with a hamstring injury this year. It is something that, if you look at sports and a history with an injury like this, you have got to miss a lot of time to get healthy. Now, hamstrings are really tough. I always kind of try to, if you're a, you know, if you like football and you have a favorite NFL team, I compare this to, like, hey, when a talented star wide receiver all of a sudden gets a hamstring injury, it could last all year because your body might be telling you, like, hey, no, I'm not a doctor, but I'm just saying, I've seen it with my teams plenty of times. I've seen it with other teams, but like your body might be telling you it's healthy. And then you get out there and you try to run and you're just like, oh, it pops. And it's like restarting that cycle. Now, we've seen guys in the NBA this year that have had hamstring injuries pop up that have missed months and months. So Darren is trying to play through this or trying to get to a point where he can play. There's an argument to be made that he has been not 100% at all this year. And the biggest thing is the context in which Darren is in. Now, coming into this year, I did a lot of episodes with my co-host, Tyler Metcalf, and we were talking about Darren and previewing this. And we were like, hey, one of the biggest concerns is the fit at Kansas. Now, this isn't slander to Kansas Jayhawk fans or, you know, Bill Self, anything. It's the context that he was going into was probably not going to be full display of Darren's ability. And what I mean by that is, like, you looked at the roster and you looked at the history of what Kansas has, you know, produced with top prospects playing for Bill Self. Bill Self and that program do not just all of a sudden let a freshman come in here and be like, hey, go do whatever you want. They're really good about, you know, getting these guys ready for that next step. They're really good about getting these guys to play like within the system and trust it. It doesn't automatically produce unbelievable statistical seasons. So that even goes to be like at a point this year, Darren was playing unbelievable and kind of surpassing that. Like, look, despite the questions, which we're going to get into right now in 17 games this year, he's at 19.5 points, 3.8 rebounds, 1.4 assists on 47, 40, 79. If you've been following the narrative and the buzz lately, you might think Darren Peterson's averaging 12 points a game and shooting 20% from three. And when you take in everything, the context, which, you know, Kansas needs him to score. Kansas needs him to put the ball in the basket. You look at the roster, a lot of those guys play tough. And like I'm saying, this isn't slander to them, but like Flory Badunga, really talented big in this class, probably going to be, you know, in that late first conversation, maybe a little bit higher. We'll get into that in a sec. But Badunga is more of a lob threat, you know, defensive specialist. I know they've got some great play from Melvin Council, but there's not a lot of consistent offense from that team. So they need Darren to score. They need him to be a bucket getter. So yes, the assist numbers people like to fascinate. He hasn't been asked to be a consistent, like, oh, we need you to go out there and just be a facilitator all the time. Darren's number one focus right now, besides being healthy, is trying to score. So look, there's been a lot of narratives, and this is what I want to focus on. There's been a lot of narratives pumped out in the media and in social media about Jaren Peterson and what's going on with the injury status. If you're getting caught up, you know, he'll come back, he'll play a first half, look great, sits out the rest. Or people have been speculating he's just constantly trying to pull himself. Look, everything I've heard is, you know, it checks out with what you're probably hearing from the head coach. Jaren has been hurt this year. He has been trying to get back to play. And, you know, there's just a lot of stories out there that are not right. And this isn't Jaren being mentally weak. That I've heard the actual opposite from every single intel source I check in on is like, Jaren is a relentless worker. He's a great kid. He wants to play. And the story that, you know, there's multiple times this year where Jaren could have shut down and probably been the number one pick. So you can make an argument he is hurting his stock by trying to play through an injury, which isn't fair to him because he wants to be out there. There's going to be a lot of speculation. I think, you know, moving forward, this is something that can't get 100% like, you know, gavel down by a judge. Like, we can't just get this wiped out unless a couple things happen. Jaren plays and is healthy and finishes games, plays good, or we get to the combine and we just find out medicals were green light. There's nothing right now to suggest that, you know, anything of that won't happen. I think everyone feels pretty good about it. Everyone knows Jaren from previously, from when he was in high school. And my biggest lesson I've always been trying to share, like showcase and share with folks is what I've been told by NBA teams, all like 1 year doesn't tell the story. What I mean by that is like teams have been scouting these guys for years. They've been getting intel on these guys for years. The fact that they go somewhere and have one season that might be a little shaky is not going to get them to be like, now we can't take him in the top 10. One of my best stories was, you know, talking to someone who's now an assistant GM. And back then I was struggling with Jaden McDaniels as a prospect at Washington. Cause I was like, hey, the film, just like, I can't get over it. And it was, you know, he was at Washington, one and done. That team played a lot of zone at the time. And I was just like, man, I don't know if I see it. And that scout, that exec told me at that time, like, hey, Jaden could play. He's a heck of a talent. And don't get too obsessed with 1 year and how that fit was, the context. So I think it's just important to remember that. Like, put that in your head. If you want to bring up all these numbers and everything and say, hey, he's struggling with the, you know, assists, play, you know, fine. Understandable. I get it. I look at it the same thing, but also have the context with those numbers behind it. I have no doubts, no concerns about Jaren Peterson. Everything I've heard is that a ringing endorsement about the kid, of his work ethic, about what he's trying to do. And I think this year has just been a tough situation where maybe he's getting some bad advice. Maybe he's just simply trying to get healthy enough to play and your body tells no. You know, I think you see it. If you watch on film and you are focusing on Jaren, you can see times clearly where he's just not right. It could be him running back in defense and it's not effort. You could just see that the body is not responding because like he'll try to go up for a rebound. And you're like, that looks 30% of what I've seen for years. So it's a tough situation. I think there's a lot of stories that are getting pumped out right now that you're like, what is this? Like, we're trying to find something. No, that's not true. And I just want everyone to calm down. And like, this is not on the kid. Jaren's a heck of a great kid, but this is just a crappy injury that won't go away. And I think that as time goes over, we're going to find out like that's the case. Let's move on. AJ DeBanta of BYU. A lot of questions this year about AJ when it comes to fans specifically. The whole year, everything I've been told is like, hey, AJ's not going past two. That was also something I was being told when AJ was struggling a little bit. And it was just like, because teams have, like I just brought up with Jaren, teams have evaluated these guys for years. Now, if you haven't watched AJ before this year, his junior year was unbelievable. It was a bad man. I got to see him at Nike Hoop Summit. And that year, you know, AJ was playing on the rosters despite getting ready for his senior year. And that was against, you know, Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper. And he was a bad man at that point. And then senior year, it was a little bit underwhelming, but it was more just kind of like you didn't see that tenacity and you kind of understood it because AJ was just kind of hyped up with the media and social media of just being like, oh, he's just unbelievable talent. So it's a young kid, you get it. Just kind of more of like, I think a young kid and understanding like, yeah, I'm the guy. I'm the dude out here. And the second year of Hoops on, I got to see him. I was kind of like, man, I got some questions, some concerns. And despite that, whenever I talk to teams, they're just like, no, AJ is incredible. And teams have constantly said like, hey, top two, worst, he's going second. And it's because the narrative I've got is like, hey, when AJ's on, he's the scariest player in this class. And you could see flashes of that this year. This has been probably coming into the year, I was the most concerned about AJ. And what I mean by that, it was like, I thought he was an unbelievable talent, but I was like, I have the most questions with AJ moving forward. I knew Cam Boozer started out my preseason at number one. I love Cam. Still love him. I have him at three. I can still love him. And AJ was the one that I was like, out of the big three, I think he's the rawest and has the most questions I need to get answered. One of that was because when I got to see him the second year of Hoop Summit, I thought the shot needed a lot of work. And I was like, I think the playmaking, you know, he could get a little tunnel vision. Early portion of the year, I thought the tunnel vision stuff kind of really was like, okay, you got to figure that out. Now, this is very early. His growth, the last maybe month or so, starting specifically for me, the Arizona game at BYU. Arizona's been great this year. Their defense has been fantastic. They've done a really good job, like kind of planning and game strategy against some of these guys to slow them down. They've got some really good defensive pieces. You know, Ivan Karchenkov's been fantastic, one of the more underrated defensive guys in this entire college basketball season. Potentially a party crasher, maybe, but I still think like he'll have another year. Jane Bradley, Bryn Burries, their team's been really, really strong defensively. And in that game, you saw AJ struggle to adjust. So it was something where I was like, hey, this has got to be figured out by the end of the year. Because he's got to figure out like, hey, okay, I'm getting these doubles. Where's the next read? Where do I got to get the ball moving? Like, I got to be able to feel this out. He figured it out in like two games and was making less than that. Because the next game was the Kansas game. And I'm sorry if I'm off on one. But the next game was the Kansas game. And I thought early on, you know, Darren was cooking that game. And I thought AJ was doing a really good job of feeling like Kansas kind of watched the previous game and was planning on that. Like, all right, let's crowd the lane, prevent the drives, make it a little difficult for him. And you saw AJ's processing was already so quick where like he knew where the ball should go. Guys were missing shots. I was like, man, he should have six or seven assists in this first half. Then it keeps going on and you keep seeing the flashes and you keep seeing how quickly he's understanding defensive assignments and like how to adjust and where he should go with the ball. I thought it was one of the loudest developmental, you know, pitches for a prospect of like, look how quickly he understood how to adjust. Like, that's everything you want to see with a prospect. Since then, he's been tremendous. You're starting to see a really good balance of like the scoring mentality and the understanding of what my scoring gravity can create for my teammates. And he's really stepped up since, you know, Richie Saunders has been out with an injury. I think it's been one of the loudest, you know, players in that top three of like AJ's been unbelievable. Darren's been unbelievable. AJ, when he's been healthy, AJ has really taken some serious strides in this last month. I mean, we're talking about big time performances against Houston. That's probably one of my favorite games. Iowa State is unbelievable. I still have questions about the defense moving forward, but you see what the full package looks like. When I got to see him in person, I think he's going to be bigger than 6'9". I think he's going to be closer to 6'10". He's gigantic. And then I got to see his on-court routine, and it's just laser locked in, vocal. You could tell that he wants to really be that leader, be that voice for this team right now with BYU. So there's a lot of really good stuff turning in the right direction with AJ. And I think that's what makes this even more exciting when it comes to this two-headed monster race right now between Darren and AJ. I'm sure we'll be talking plenty about those guys moving forward. Let's go with Cam Boozer right now, and we'll gather ourselves for a second. But Cameron Boozer at Duke, if you're getting caught up, I'm trying to be nice to these guys, sickos, bear with me. Cameron Boozer's around 6'9", 250, an absolute monster on the court, efficient, productive, consistent, everything you would want from a big man. And what you might be asking yourself is like, well, then why is he going one? Well, let's talk about it. Cam is one of the toughest evaluations ever. Now, some of you might hear that and be like, no, he's not. Just bear with me. Stay with me right now. Let me preach for a little bit. He's got every single team overthinking. He's got every scout overthinking. And he's got evaluators overthinking. Because you're overthinking, if something like this is so good and so consistent and an analytics darling, which he's almost breaking every analytic possible, why are we doubting this? And it's because some are continuing to wonder about, does he have as much upside as the others? That's upside is everything, folks, with the NBA draft and with NBA teams specifically. Upside is everything. You're swinging at the top of the draft for the biggest. If it hits, it's a grand slam. You're not swinging for doubles. You're not swinging for triples. You are swinging for the fences, bottom of the ninth, two outs. So you're swinging for everything. You're swinging for a jackpot. Now, Cameron Boozer has been just a monster for Duke this year. He's been everything you wanted him to be. He's averaging 22, 10, 4 on shooting splits of 58, 40, 77. Those numbers are awesome. Every time you talk to a scout, the narrative is like, hey, I love Cam. No matter where I put him, I don't feel good about it. And it's more of like, if I put him at 1, I get it. If I put him at 3, I feel like I'm cheating on Cam. I feel like it's something where I'm not going to be able to sleep good at night. And you understand that because it's the same way I feel this whole year is no matter where I put Cam, I feel like it's wrong. Now, at 1, I feel fine of being like, it's Cam Boozer. I'm banking on, you know, efficiency, production, and what he's done every level of his basketball career. If I put him a little lower, but then you're like, hey, well, the guys behind him might be turning into all NBA superstars that are the best players in the league contending for MVPs. Fine. So it's a tough dilemma you have. Now, I think Cam, for me, is a really fun evaluation because I think a lot of people focus too much and heat up too much on like the thorns. He's not Caleb Wilson when it comes to his athleticism. He's not like the most gifted offensive package player. Like, you know, I'm more just saying like there's still room for improvement. Now, we have to remember a lot of these guys are still 18 years old. I think Cam's one of the youngest guys. He's going to turn 19 in July. And so basically at Summer League, he will be turning 19. He does not look 18 years old if you see him in person. He is looks like he's been in the league in a weight, you know, program for 9 years. He's got tree trunks for legs. So a lot of people focus on the athleticism, you know, verticality. But Cam does a great job of using his strengths to get where he wants to get. You see in the Michigan game, like there's a couple times where it's like he's getting rebounds with guys surrounding him. And then I also think like, hey, you can have questions about the finishing or the athleticism, but the defense also. But like Cam does so many good things around the basket. He gets to the free throw line all the time. He's a rebounding monster. His playmaking is something that I think is like weirdly not appreciated enough. Cam's playmaking is unbelievable. He has fantastic vision, timing, anticipation. So some will look and be like, hey, I want Darren or AJ. And then I feel like you get bummed. And I was like, what? No, that's why you're seeing these teams that are trying to tank. We're not going down that rabbit hole. Tank so early to get, you know, if you don't get one, you want to just at least have a shot of like, I just want to land one of these three, one of these four. And I think also the big thing right now is like teams, like why you're seeing them try to get that first bottom spot so much. You want to just land in the top five at worst, like absolute nightmare. You're like, I want to get a top five player in this class. So to focus on Cam though, like I think he has everything you're looking for in a guy that's going to play a really long time in the NBA. Compared him a little bit to like Minnesota, Kevin Love and Al Horford. That's my vibes when it comes to Cam Boozer. I feel like some people have been like, no way. And I'm like, look, the reason I'm using those names is because I think Cam Boozer is going to be playing 16 plus years in the NBA and being a production monster. And those two NBA guys I just named have over 30 years of NBA experience. So I love Cam. I understand if you're going to bat for him at one, but I think the concerns a little watered down. And I know NBA teams are still very high on him, but it's just kind of one of those like, well, our NBA team's going to really pass up the idea of, hey, we might ignore this just because of the upside swings ahead. We'll see, but I still think Cam's an unbelievable talent. All right, let's take a quick break. Get right back after it. All right, so we've done the big four. I want to kind of talk a little bit quicker, but break down some of these other names making some buzz. Let's talk with kind of the guys in that next range. Personally, for me, that I think have some variance around the league, but specifically the point guards. I'm going to do a little combo guard too here. I'm cheating here. But Kingston Flemings, Keaton Wagler, Mykael Brown, Darius Acuff are four of the more popular names right now. This point guard class is unbelievable. If you're getting caught up, it's that special. I've done a piece on it before of kind of talking about at nosceilingsnba.com, but I've done a piece talking about like, hey, it's almost like going to go get ice cream. And it's like, what's your flavor of the month? What do you prefer? Because each of these guys has a different type of strength in their game. And it's kind of like, well, what are you looking for your roster? What's going to be the best fit? It might kind of sway in a different order when it comes to draft night. All of them are getting a lot of buzz in NBA circles. Keaton Wagler has a lot of fans, and it's well-deserved. The Purdue performance where he had, you know, 40-plus points on the road was unbelievable. Wagler's been great. Like, he really started to just turn some heads when Kylan Boswell was out, and they had to kind of lean on Wagler to be a little bit more consistent. Now, it's an unbelievable story. We always love the fun story, but, you know, wasn't heavily recruited. I think he had two D1 offers, goes to Illinois. Still young, listed around 6'6", I think about 190-ish, 195. Always remember, folks, measurements with team websites are always a little grain of salt. But on the year, he's averaged 18, 5, and 4.3 assists. Shooting splits of 45, 42, 81, which are just great. Those are great. Now, important to remember for a lot of, you know, fans out there and evaluators, cold stretches happen. These guys are young. Teams, you know, all of a sudden, Keaton Wagler got to a point this year, and a lot of these guys get to a point this year where it's like, oh, you're going to start facing big boy competition, which you're number one on the scouting report now, which means, you know, other teams have the assistant coaches have the scout, and they're preparing for you way ahead of the year. So you're going to get different looks. You got to adjust. And, you know, look, Wagler's struggled shooting it a little bit lately. He's averaging in his last five games, he's averaging 19, 5, and 4, but shooting splits of 37, 31, 83. Notably, his last two games, he was 3-for-8 and 5-for-15. So nice little 8-for-23. Don't get too high, don't get too low from a cold stretch. Just be patient. But Wagler is what everyone dreams about in NBA circles. You get positional size, versatility as a guard, and a dangerous shooter. That is enough already to get teams licking their chops. Now, Wagler's also been someone with fantastic vision and playmaking. At one point this year, I feel like the public narrative concern was like, oh, the athleticism. The thing you have to, like what I said before, focus on the goods first. Can you live with the negative? Like, are we ever going to need Keaton Wagler to be a go downhill and dunk on guys all the time? No. There's a lot of guys like that in the NBA, where it's like, hey, they're unbelievable shooters. They can hit it from anywhere on the court. They have fantastic feel and playmaking. They have good footwork and ability to use their change of gears, change of speed. They play good within the flow of the game. Wagler does all of that. I think he's fantastic with it. So it's what good do they do on the court? He does a lot of really good stuff. And NBA teams are very excited about that. So I think it's a name that's the rise for him this year has been that good. And it's going to be keep being one of these guys that, you know, Illinois has a nice little run. He's going to heat up a little bit. And at 6'6", and someone that can transition to an NBA team and potentially be like, hey, he could play on the ball. He could play off the ball. He could make right reads to get guys good looks, or he could play, you know, off the ball as you're running sets for him. Forget it's very, very exciting for teams. And then you get the combination of the youth, the potential upside. You know, obviously his body's going to need to fill out a little bit, but you can see why teams are high and why a lot of scouts are high too. Like, this is a player that could be a real find for an NBA team. Let's talk about my guy, Kingston Flemings, listed around 6'4", 190-ish at Houston, freshman guard. One of the biggest risers alongside Wagler this year, I thought. I still love him. Still absolutely love him. Now, Kingston's and Houston going through a little bit of a cold stretch right now. Stats on the year, 16.6 points, 3.8 rebounds, 5.1 assists, shooting splits of 48, 37, 85. He's also pitched in 1.6 steals per game and only 1.9 turnovers. Look, you hear those stats and you're like, those are fantastic. But Kingston's going through his growing pains stretch of the year. One of my favorite games of the year was against BYU for him. 19, 5, and 5. Thought he was great in that game. He ended up shooting 8 of 18 from the field, which in the box score, you might be like, eh. But if you watch that game, I thought he was absolutely tremendous. The thing with Kingston is, one, yes, he's 6'4". That's what I've been told. It's like, oh, very legit, 6'4". So calm down on the 6'3" stuff. And seeing him in person, I was like, oh yeah, he looks bigger than, you know, what some people might think. Like, he looks way bigger in person than on tape. I think the playmaking is that good, and it's with that Houston context again, with that system, Kingston's opening a lot of possessions and looks for a lot of his teammates with his playmaking, his drive ability, his ability to stop on a dime. There's really, really good feel stuff. And the outside shot, yeah, I got some questions, but I also think it's like, well, all the good he does with his game is how he can navigate and manipulate a defense to create looks for himself or teammates. He's really good at getting to his spots. I understand his recent stretch, you know, people are kind of like, oh gosh, is Kingston. Look, last five games, 14, 5, and 3.6 assists, 34, 32, 100% from the free throw line. I understand, cold stretch, but don't let one stretch just kind of throw the whole year away. I think he's been awesome this year. And then, you know, a lot of people are wondering about the offensive ball, and it's like, well, you're forgetting this kid defensively is special. I love his two-way mentality. I think he's going to be a player that really helps teams take that next leap when you can get like, okay, we have the point guard position figured out. I think that's what Kingston's going to be, and he's going to be a fun one to kind of monitor. I still think he's going to heat up a little bit, and Houston's going to bounce back. They've had, as a team, they've had some tough performances lately. Kansas, Arizona, they just couldn't get anything to fall. So be patient. Iowa State game, everyone seems to forget, was, you know, right before that, and he was outstanding in that game. Let's talk about Darius Acuff. Everyone wants to talk about, just kidding, Arkansas fans. Darius Acuff, freshman point guard at Arkansas, listed around 6'3", 190, has been absolutely magnificent this year. Five-star prospect coming into the year. Obviously, Arkansas fans will want you to know, like, hey, John Calipari. Guys, we know. We understand. We've been watching the same film as you are. Acuff is a puzzling one, and what I mean by that is, like, you understand throughout the year, I feel like there was some pause talking around, and it was mainly just because of like, hey, do you buy it? And then you've gotten to a point now with Acuff where teams are like, look, at some point, we can't ignore this production. We can't ignore what he's doing on the court. And I understand that. I think it's becoming a conversation of like, hey, at some point in this draft, there's going to be a little bit of like a pause. And I don't mean that, but I'm saying in like a top 10, you could feel right now in February, there's a bit of like a, hey, what's the drop off after this? Like, who comes into this conversation? And I'm not saying that Acuff is at the bottom of that, but I'm saying like, for me in the top 10, I think Acuff could go a ton of different places. But I think you're like, okay, well, who's the competition that would get you to not take Acuff? That's where I think I'm at personally. And I think he's been so good this year that he's up there firmly in that top 10. I think he's got a conversation. He's got a case with all these point guards. Personally, watching a couple of his games lately, yeah, he's a bad man. I understand people will have questions about the defense, the, you know, some of the offensive stuff, but I also watch him and I'm like, kid's monster. Kid's very, very good. He understands how to get to his spots. He could shoot the crap out of the ball. He's been awesome for Arkansas this game. If you haven't watched the Alabama game, just go watch that. You'll probably fall in love with them. So I think Acuff is one of these guys that is quickly, we see this a lot of time. There's always like some hesitation with a lot of prospects when you're talking to different scouts or teams. And it's a little pause of like, are we going to get a little bit more of a curve? Like almost like you hit a brick wall and things are bouncing out. I think Acuff's pushed through that wall. He's had a couple games where he's not shooting great, but it's nothing where you're like, oh gosh, that was a tough night. He's doing so many good things on the basketball court. I think he's still, you know, hands up, like conversation for one of the best point guards in this class. He's been great. I think this is going to be a point guard class for the top four guys where you're going to go down to the wire. It's going to come down to pre-draft, intel, interviews, always does. But I think this year more, it's like, okay, it might not be slander to wherever these guys get picked, and people shouldn't get too caught up in that. Because it just might be more of like teams are looking at these guys and being like, well, that one, this style fits what we have best. Because they're all incredibly talented. And it's going to be really fun to kind of see how it plays out. Mykael Brown of Louisville, up and down all year. dealt with a back injury. If you're getting caught up, he dealt with a back injury, missed some time, had a couple unbelievable performances to like start the year. Then he was out with a back injury for a long time. Third game of the year against Kentucky, he was brilliant. 29 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists. That was on 8 of 16. Then he ends up playing until about December 13th, would be sidelined after that until January 24th. So missed some time, but, played against Arkansas this year. Didn't have the greatest shooting night, 7 of 19, but finished with 22, 5 and 3. Duke has a rough game shooting. Then all of a sudden, seems like we start to get Mikael Brown healthy rolling again, where puts up some bonker numbers over a 5-game split. He was he was averaging 29, 5 and 3 with 2.4 steals on 52, 54, 100. Mikael's going to be one of the ultimate you're swinging type of prospects, because he hasn't been as consistent this year. But when he's on, he looks like point guard number one in this class. Now, I know Arkansas fans just listened to the last, segment and probably were like, well, hey, A-Cuff's had big games like that. Yeah, but Mikael's one of those like, oh gosh, he's on fire right away. He can pull it from everywhere. I still got some questions with this game. I think he just needs time to get some seasoning and figure it out. It's been kind of a rough year, kind of almost in the same world of like the Darren, like on, off. When is he playing? Is he healthy? Is he fully there? This is also a guy that like, before this year, had an unbelievable showing at FIBA, has had a growth spurt, kind of looks just like a late bloomer, but it's one of those like, okay, teams with this point guard class, you need to see a little bit more consistency. But when he's on and things are good, like, oh my gosh, like this is a dangerous looking player. So I would just monitor that one. I think teams are going to be patient and kind of like, hey, let's let the pre-draft process kind of iron out, or these upcoming months. Let's end this with some quick hitters. Just some names I think that you should kind of keep an eye on moving forward. Popular name I get asked about, Braylon Mullins of UConn. Teams love him. Now everyone would be like, why is he this high in this? Teams love him. And you got to understand the context. This is a big context guy. Like Mullins, great kid, plays hard. Before this year was a bad man. Missed the first 6 weeks of the year with an ankle injury. Comes back. They were slowly bringing him in. He has a lot of ability to his game on both sides of the ball. I think he's going to be a name that continues to trend up. I think he's going to be a name that just dominates the pre-draft process. So I would keep an eye on Mullins. Don't get too low on, or don't get too fascinated with the numbers. Understand the context he's in. Chris Sinak of Houston, I still think is one to just keeping an eye on. He's sort of started to turn the corner. I think teams are still intrigued about, like, could he be a returner? Could he be in this class? The big class this year, and we'll bring in Jaden Quaintance with this, because my personal belief and kind of what I'm feeling now, but like because of the Quaintance uncertainty with the injury and probably not going to play again this year, I think this is wide open now with the bigs. I think there's teams are waiting for bigs to kind of cement themselves and rise up and who can be the guy now, because it gets really uncertain of like, okay, there's all these point guards probably going to be going in the lottery. The positional depth from some of these other positions gets pretty thin. So if you're not taking a point guard, who are you taking? Who's the first big to come off the board? Who's the first, or no, after like AJ DeBanza and Caleb Wilson and, you know, some of these other forwards, who's the next forward group? Where do you take them? So I think a lot of people are trying to look at like, okay, well, there's the upside swings. Where's the guys that can make some momentum? Because there is some uncertainty with the big class. I think a lot of scouts and teams feel like some of these bigs would be more like you're picking a little bit outside the lottery, but we always see with the draft, it's like, okay, well, they're not going to just go 7 or 8 straight picks of point guards. So it's just kind of like movement time. Still, we got a couple of big months to try to figure out like who's going to be moving. Sinak, I think, is one that is sort of given a little bit bounce back to his stock. I don't know how high it is right now. I think teams are still trying to see conference tournament, March Madness, what he could do. Merez Johnson of Michigan is getting popular, and it's well deserved. The defense is that good. The intangibles, he checks a lot of boxes. In that same conversation I was just having, like of Quaintance and the uncertainty, I think a lot of teams are getting comfortable with Merez because they see how this could be impactful, have upside, play for a while. Mari Allen, I think, is another one of Bama to keep an eye on. I think that could be a big riser in these next couple months. Nate Amen, of Tennessee has been great. I think he's sort of bounced back and is in now that lottery conversation for sure. Some guys I think I got some questions on personally, and some guys that I think, you know, we'll see. Yoxel Enenberg, I love Yoxel. One of my guys I like. I feel like we're going to slowly start seeing maybe some guys leapfrog him, and it's not just because of Yoxel, but I'm wondering if more like the upside guys will start really making some noise in March. Kareem Lopez, a name that I believe is higher from the buzz I have, higher in NBA circles than my personal rankings. I've been trying to get caught up on Kareem's film. I'm starting to see why. So I think that's a name that's probably going to be a little bit higher than the public. And it's because Kareem's been playing really good overseas and he's been consistent and starting to be healthy. That's what you love to see. Cameron Carr, I think, has got a lot of fans. And you also, a fun thing to think about if you're one of these fans that looks at like the big boards or you're trying to make your own rankings, look at the archetypes and try to understand like, okay, well, if a team was wanting this or adding this to the roster, where are those guys? Now you could say some of the top shooters, just talking about like kind of the 6'5" plus guys in this class. You could be like, hey, Braylon Mullins can shoot it. Obviously there's a couple other guys that are in the point guard position, but you're like, hey, after Braylon Mullins, who are the best off ball shooters or guys that can just catch and shoot? Cam Carr is in that conversation. Isaiah Evans, who's sneaky been playing pretty solid for Duke, going to be in that conversation. There's a lot of other guys, obviously I'm not going to mention right this second, but they're probably beyond that. So there's a tier where you're like, hey, we need an off-ball movement guy or a shooter, some floor spacing. I think Cam Carr is going to be a name that still teams like. Some quick hitters. There's a couple of names to keep an eye on moving forward as like, hey, could they be in this class or potentially, or is the pre-draft process even bigger for them? I think like Christian Anderson has really been cooking since JT Toppin came out, or was out, excuse me. Anderson, I love. I'm just more wondering, like, is this class going to be so deep at that position that he could kind of look and be like, do I want to be a guy that's maybe going late teens, or do I want to next year skyrocket because that draft isn't as deep? We'll wait and see. I think it's just one of those guys you're like, hey, let's see the pre-draft process. Let's see how the rest goes out. I'm just going to mention Ibuka Okoro from Stanford. I absolutely love. I still feel right now like he's not going to be in this class, but there's a lot of guys that I also think should test, because 1 week can change your whole life when it comes to the combine. Dalen Swain's been a popular name. I think he's a little bit lower in NBA circles. He's been an advanced or analytics darling and really can play. I've loved him since his time at Xavier. I know teams have been intrigued. He's been great for Texas this year, but I think the context and, you know, I have questions about his outside shot. The teams are a little bit lower on that. Swain, I think, could do a lot of damage with a good pre-draft process in a good way. So I'm just keeping an eye on him. I think Flory Badunga's made a lot of momentum lately. Copete of Arizona has been kind of sidelined. He's a tough one right now because I think he needs to get back healthy and kind of show some stuff. I feel like his buzz has cooled a little bit where it's like, okay, I think maybe late teens-ish right now. Could it bounce back? Absolutely. Patton Ngongba is a tough one because the analytics are fantastic, but he's, I think, still in that mix with a lot of these bigs of like, okay, could he separate himself? We'll see. I'm just kind of doing a check-in for you guys. I'm trying to spotlight some names of like, hey, we got a long way to go still, but this is the important time of the year to really lock in on these guys. Like March Madness is humongous. A lot of these guys get boosted up after strong tournament runs. Whether you like to agree with it or not, it's how it happens every year. I think also, like, pre-draft process is going to be crucial. Medical evaluations, the combine, how these guys perform, interviews. This is a class that's shaping up to have, obviously, the big four at the top. It's going to be an unbelievable race to kind of see, like, who's called first. After that, the point guard position is so deep. Who can separate themselves and gain a little bit of momentum? It might even come down to just the team and who played great at workouts. Then, you know, you get past that, and it seems still wide open. When it comes to like, hey, there's upperclassmen teams like, but also there's also some guys that teams are circling about, hey, they could be risers to kind of get up here because they might be younger, offer a little bit more upside. The intel's been strong. Stay open-minded. Be patient with this class. Don't get too passionate right now about like, hey, you had a bad game. Like, don't get too overreactionary because there's a long, long way to go. So, hey, I hope this one was fun. Wanted to do just a little feelings or update, you know, vibes on this class. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff, get back rolling on this, probably do some more team specific stuff, some mocks, some big boards, try to get some guests on the pod to come kind of talk more specifically about like their lottery team situation, what players they think they could fit. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up in the upcoming months. So that's going to do it. Thank you guys. It's been a minute. Feels good to be back on the grind here. We'll be back full throttle. A lot of good stuff coming on the YouTube channel. So make sure you subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Leave us a comment and go check out NoSailingsNBA.com. My name's Tyler Rucker. You can follow me at Tyler_Rucker. And thank you guys for checking out and the support as always. Best time of the year, folks. Let's get ready to get rocking.